Due to the graphic nature of some of the content in this episode, listener discretion is advised. 1:24 a.m., June 9th, 2009, a call goes out requesting the assistance of the Mooresville Police Department's Special Response Team on a dimly lit street in a sleepy middle-class subdivision. Uniformed officers stand outside the scene of a violent home invasion, which left a young mother wounded and her husband, Matt Stewart, along with the couple's 3-year-old daughter, still inside the small family home. With the attacker's whereabouts unknown, these officers, who had arrived at the scene 35 minutes earlier, were unwilling or unable to enter the home, so they called for the response team, and they waited. When it comes to the murder of Matt Stewart, events that transpired on that fateful morning between midnight and 2:30 a.m. are perhaps as consequential as they are unknown. In the police call log, you'll find a skeletal outline of the key actions taken by law enforcement, like the call to the SRT and the eventual discovery of Matt Stewart's body at precisely 2:30 a.m. But these snapshots only scratch the surface. And in the last year, my curiosity is largely fixated on what exactly happened in between these actions, the details and context that could bind them all together into a cohesive chain of events. But with the files of this murder still tightly sealed, the only way to peer into these moments is through the stories of those who lived them. 10 years' time can erode memory, but for a certain family living on Shepherd Hill Drive, a sight they won't soon forget is that of the special response team arriving in the neighborhood that cool summer morning and promptly entering a small family home. Armed and alert, they crept single file through hallways of framed family pictures, slowly but deliberately making their way up the carpeted staircase into the master bedroom. But here, in this house, the response team didn't find Matt Stewart or his 3-year-old daughter, because the team wasn't in the Stewart's house. Not yet. At this moment, they were down the street at another house on Shepherd Hill Drive, and they were looking for something else. My name is Freddie, and this is Unforgotten, a podcast series chasing a story that doesn't want to be told, the unsolved murder of Matt Stewart.
Back in June, a husband and a wife were asleep in their upstairs bedroom here when a stranger came in, brutally attacked, and killed the husband.
It was personal.
Why isn't he dead in the bed?
There was a person.
She cleaned up everything.
No one heard gunshots.
No one heard gunshots.
They may know who did it. They may know exactly who did it.
She came to the door pounding on it.
The mattress was covered in blood.
Last December, I met up with Steve, who hosts an online forum about Matt's murder on unforgotten.freeforums.net. If you've listened to any of the question and answer episodes, you know that Steve and I have spent hours discussing every detail of this case. While I was in town, I wanted to bring Steve to the setting of our conversations, a quiet little neighborhood called Gabriel Estates, located up Highway 115 on the northernmost edge of Mooresville city limits. I wanted us to take a closer look at the layout and landscape of the neighborhood as we continue to speculate about how Matt's attacker was able to get in and out of the vicinity undetected, especially given that the report shows two squad cars arriving at the scene just 4 minutes after Angel called 911. So I met up with Steve in Mooresville in a Food Lion parking lot.
My man.
Good to see you.
How you doing?
Good.
What's the game plan?
You tell me. You're literally the man with the plan.
I don't know if I have a real plan. You want to just go over there?
Yeah.
We'll just see.
So, how far away is it from here? I've never been to the neighborhood.
It's not far.
As we've investigated it more, I'm less inclined to think that someone had to travel through the neighborhood very far to get away. That doesn't seem like the mentality of the person who did this.
You mean like get far away geographically?
Right. If things didn't go well and the cops showed up faster, you don't want to have to cover a half a mile on foot to get to your getaway vehicle.
You want to park close.
You
want to
get
saying.
As close as possible.
Yeah. All right. the Shell station.
Gabriel Estates is made up of around 120 small and mid-sized homes, with a few roads that loop around and a handful of cul-de-sacs. But there's only one entrance down Gabriel Drive, and the house where Matt was killed is nowhere near it. However, the house is on the north side of Shepherd Hill Drive, so the only thing separating its backyard from 115 is a small berm and a few ranch-style homes off the highway. Last season, we spoke with a woman named Toylene, who had been one of the Stewarts' next-door neighbors up until Matt's murder. Toylene mentioned the possibility that the intruder, or intruders, had entered the house by going directly from 115 on foot, over the berm and into the backyard.
Last thing I heard was they thought he went in and out the back door because that wasn't locked. I heard they normally locked it, but it wasn't locked that night.
She also claimed that the Shell gas station on the other side of the highway had security cameras, but that police checked and found nothing. Steve and I thought we'd better stop in the Shell station.
Hey, doing well, how are you? We're working on a podcast series about an unsolved murder that happened down the street in the neighborhood over there. Okay. We wanted to know if we could speak with the person that owned this gas station. I didn't know if the same person owned it at the time of the murder. It was in 2009. Do you know who owned it in 2009?
What do you want to be?
To see if they had any recollection of the police coming to gather film from the security cameras.
We don't remember. And since that time, I changed two or three times security cameras.
Do you remember the murder that happened in 2009?
I don't know last week. I'm just because it's 2000. You're talking about 2009. I'm here 2009.
Oh, you were here.
Yeah,
oh, okay.
Maybe they came in. Maybe they took the video from me.
Uh-huh.
But don't remember anything.
You don't remember?
Swear to God.
Yeah.
I love to help.
Yeah.
I cannot give it to you, but the cops come, I can give it to the cops.
Right. No, that makes sense.
We knew it wouldn't exist anymore.
Right.
We were just trying to find out if they were...
No. If they came in and if they took it from me, whenever the cops come here, and if we have anything, we 100% contribute.
But there have been times in the past where they've come to you for footage about stuff? It does happen?
Yes.
Okay.
And I give it to them too.
Sure, of course.
When they come to us, and once in a blue moon they come, they said that something happened on red light, show them everything. I show them how to work, and then let them, if you think anything here, download now.
I have one last weird question for you.
Right.
Do you sell gallons of milk?
Yes, I do.
Have you always sold gallons of milk?
Yes, I do.
Okay, so if somebody were running out from the neighborhood back there to get a gallon of milk?
Yes, I do.
They could have done that in 2009.
Yes, I do. I sold 2,000, and I sold 2009, 2015. And I sell 2,000 gallons of water and gallon milk, too.
Fantastic.
All right.
Fantastic.
Well, that's good to know. When do you guys close?
6 to 11.
6 to 11.
11:30, but I get the safe side 6 to 11.
6 to 11. Okay.
Good.
Yep. Thank you so much.
Time.
Really appreciate it.
How do you not remember a murder of this? But they were closed. It sounds like they were closed when it happened, right?
Well, they were closed when the cops got called. To be fair, we don't know. We don't know when it happened.
So this is the only entrance in, right? Is that right?
Apparently so. So you go on Gabriel Drive, but then there's the two ways to get to Shepherd Hill.
Right. But you still have the bottleneck of this. If you're parked in here, you have to come out through this.
You have to get out this way. You have to come in this way, get out this way.
Turn right onto Shepherd Hill Drive.
There's no way this would be in.
Your destination is on the right.
And this is it. Should we ring?
How do you start that conversation?
I don't know.
There's somebody home. There's shoes by the front door.
All right, so should we knock on the door?
We're here.
Just ask if we can look in their backyard.
But first, you got to tell them what happened in that house.
Hey there. My name is Freddie. I'm a podcaster, and we're working on a podcast about an unsolved murder that happened here in 2009. All right. Okay, I have a new plan.
In the course of this podcast, I've had the door slammed in my face a lot, metaphorically. I can't say that the real thing was any more or less discouraging, but given the circumstances, I guess it's understandable. I wanted Steve to meet some of the neighbors that I've come to know in the last year, particularly a family who lived just a few houses down from the Stewarts at the time of Matt's murder. For the purposes of this podcast, we'll call them the Garrisons.
Do well, how are you? Merry Christmas to you guys.
Nice to meet you.
That's Steve from the forum.
Nice to meet you.
They were the first people that we met when we came to look at the house. I wanted to walk around the neighborhood to see if there's going to be kids, swing sets, basketball nets. And we were walking down it, Matt and Angel. This was, what year did we move here?
07.
We were sitting in front of their house and we stopped to talk to them. And it was, they were the first people we met down here. They couldn't have been nicer.
I was 13 when this happened.
You're 13.
I mean, me and Matt hung out, played basketball and soccer together.
Yeah.
He was the nicest guy.
I have a yellow lab. Anybody terrified of friendly dogs?
No. Love dogs.
Come on in, sit down.
Thank you.
Sure.
Can I get you guys a bottle of water?
I'm fine. Okay. Thank you, though.
So have we solved this yet? Come on. Where how this all started. I had a 6 a.m. flight out that morning. Opened the garage, getting my car headed to the airport. And the SWAT team was on the driveway behind her car saying, get back in the house. We're like, what the? Finally, I said, look, I've got to go. I've got a big meeting. I've got an airline ticket, blah, blah, blah. They escorted me out of the neighborhood. So I got to the Liberty Station down on 21, 2 miles from here, 3 miles from here. And I'm talking to the woman that I know there. So she goes, yeah, the police were just in buying cases of water. There was something going on in Gabriel Estates. I believe they told me it was a murder.
Last summer, I was cold calling neighbors when I first got a hold of Mr. Garrison. It wasn't long into our conversation before I realized that he had a story to tell. In the days and weeks after the murder, Mr. Garrison claims to have had several interactions with Matt's mother-in-law, Brenda, when she came to clean the house after the investigators were finished processing the crime scene. Mr. Garrison is one of several neighbors who remembers watching the cleaning take place in this unorthodox way. He was also one of the first people I spoke with who heard directly from Brenda about the supposed premonition she claimed to have had that caused her to drive to Matt and Angel's house in the middle of the night that night.
The way she told me is that she had a bad dream and she drove up here from Concord, which blew me away. I'm like, pick up the phone. It's 12:01, whatever time in the morning it was. I would have called and just made sure everybody is okay.
And when did she tell you this?
It couldn't have been long after because she was around.
We're talking hours, days?
No, I would think in the next days.
Because she was here every day for the next
week. Cleaning.
But she cleaned the house. She didn't even wait for the company.
Well, let me ask you.
Was there a company that came over?
You know what?
Pardon me?
I think people from the church came over and cleaned it.
Do you, as head of the association at the time, do you know, is there a statute or something that requires professional cleaning in North Carolina?
I do not believe that there is one.
I was president of the association of the neighborhood at that point, and she invited me in the house to see all of the blood and everything else. It was all over the place. I was standing in front of the door. This was blood. It was unbelievable.
So you saw the blood?
I saw the blood. I saw the blood in front of the house. I saw the blood in the house.
What do you mean you saw blood in front of the house?
You know, like, if you were to knock on my door, that landing there was blood everywhere there. Not on the door, on the ground.
We've seen photos of the crime scene where they had flagged blood droplets down the driveway as she ran across the street.
But this was a significant amount at the door.
Absolutely.
I didn't know if maybe the police had actually tracked it out.
Just to rewind a little bit, because you gave us something that was a big, important, I feel, piece of new information about that landing. Can you describe your best recollection of, I mean, we're talking a pool, just lots of drops?
It was a lot more than drops. It was.
But I think Brenda had already started to clean it.
So which may have spread it, but
yeah,
there was enough blood that I wasn't walking on it, even close to it.
But you
went inside the
house?
No, I did not.
You went.
She asked me if I wanted to come in, and I saw the blood.
She
there.
Asked you if you wanted to come in
to
before
the
house was cleaned, like to see it.
I don't know what she wanted me in the house for, but I know that I wasn't comfortable.
Jesus.
There was a lot of blood that I saw, and that's where I saw it, was on the landing there.
Did she seem...
So it could have been watered down and looked like more, potentially.
I guess that's a possibility.
I'm trying to get a feel for if the only exposure that landing had to blood was whatever was on Angel and
right.
coming off of Angel as she ran away from the scene of the crime.
Right.
Could that possibly have accounted for the quantity of blood that you saw?
It looked like a lot more to me. You know, I was spooked. I've never seen something like that before. She drove that mattress out of here. I've never seen anything. She covered it with the sheet, but the sheet blew out before they got out of the driveway.
The Garrisons also wanted to show us the berm, which borders their side of Shepherd Hill Drive from Highway 115. As we venture out into the neighborhood, you'll hear in the background people mowing their lawns and kids playing basketball, a vivid reminder of what a quaint, family-friendly community this is, a stark contrast to the events we came to discuss.
I mean, this berm, if you take 9 years off of this, it's still, I know it's thick. We lost a cat, and I tried to crawl through here to look for it, figuring cats run away. This is thick as hell right here. You see this fence here? On the other side of it is Angel's house. That berm is thick and wide and dangerous.
That would be a good idea. If anybody thinks that they went up and over, that little house that's up there, I mean, there's people that have always lived up there. I can't believe anybody would go up over that berm.
Then the question is, could the investigators have spent 3 days here and possibly walked away not knowing where the person went?
There would have been footprints. I mean, it gets so wet here. I mean, if you walked across my grass now, I would know tomorrow that you walked across. I mean, you sink.
Huh.
Look how thick that is, man. That's 9 years.
If I'm trying to get through here in the middle of the night, well, that's a good damn question. But there's got to be evidence of me going through there.
I think they could have parked at the end of the street, or he came out. I mean, there's fences everywhere.
You can go down there and get to that neighborhood that's off of.
Yeah, but that's through the woods.
You think they could have gone through the woods?
It's 1 a.m. It's...
Yeah, if you're planned out.
But if you do that much planning, why do it at the house at all? You get them at a stoplight.
Have you spoken to all the newscasters that were...
I've tried.
Because I had them in my house.
My answer to this question has actually changed. Alex Reed had worked for WCNC back in the late 2000s. You've actually heard his voice in the intro to this series. I finally managed to track Mr. Reed down last month. I was thrilled when he agreed to speak on the podcast, but even more so when I learned that after all of these years, he has kept a copy of the handwritten notes he took reporting on site for this murder.
Their stories that stick with you, and this is one of the ones that did stick with me because it was such a unique and bizarre, just unique story. And I remember when we pulled over on the right-hand side of the road, just a few doors down from the house where it all happened. And we stopped, and there was another news organization there and lots of, sheriff's deputies and police, more so police around. So I remember kind of sitting there for a minute getting the lay of the land, and it was a relatively newish subdivision. I mean, it wasn't, the houses were probably maybe 10 years old, maybe a little older, but it certainly wasn't a part of the old historic part of the town. It was a newer sort of outskirts suburb, newer growth trees, not a lot of huge old towering trees or anything. So you could see pretty much all the houses as you look down the street. And I remember looking down the street and not seeing anybody. The street was void of life other than the police officers and the news vehicles. And I do remember going door to door because you want to, try and talk to some people that maybe saw something, heard something, see if you can get, if there's no eyewitness to this that we're going to get a hold of because we're not going to get in touch with the family. But so we're, talking to neighbors or trying to talk to neighbors. And I remember very few of them would come to the door, and the few that would come to the door would sort of, crack the door, but keep it closed. Yeah, I've got a few notes. The state and local police have combed through the house, but the evidence that they're finding has not given them any suspects, which is pretty rare. When you've got, usually when you comb through a scene, there's some sort of clue that tips you off to at least one suspect. Maybe the right suspect, but at least tips you off, at least gives you a direction to go. Evidence has not given them any suspects.
Okay.
That's coming from the state and local police. So this was coming from a local police officer who's speaking for everybody, all the investigators at the scene.
Okay. Did you have any notes on sign of forced entry?
Yeah, I have no sign of forced entry. The wife had a flesh wound to the arm. Father of three, and this is in my notes, it says dad of three shot in gruesome crime scene upstairs bathroom.
Yeah.
Hearing them say gruesome, when a police officer says something is gruesome, truly is going to be disturbing.
Another thing the Garrisons wanted to show me was the house next door to the Stewarts on the other side. This was where the neighbor lived, who I spoke with at the end of episode 5. Moving forward, we'll call him Mr. Michigan.
They were the sharpest German Shepherds that slept on the this side of the house.
Yeah.
The closest, they couldn't be any closer. And they said,
yeah, I understand their bedrooms are like, right.
They were literally touching. So yeah, 40 caliber.
His setup's the same as mine.
Yeah.
In my opinion, the dogs would have went nuts. There's no way the dogs would.
And we're talking 6 shots over probably a 30 seconds to a minute.
I gotta go. Chain. Good to see you.
Great seeing you.
Anytime, call me.
Nice to meet
Steve, great
you.
To
you
meet
so
you.
Steve and I also spoke at length with Mr. Garrison's son, who was only 13 at the time of the incident, but he remembers the whole ordeal quite well. In fact, he's gone on into a career of law enforcement. So hearing his insight was important in more ways than one.
But that blood on the landing, that is inconsistent with everything we know about everything.
She was
nothing
telling
accounts.
Him to come in, and there was just blood everywhere.
Why did she want him to come in? That's the weirdest.
I don't know exactly how many days, but she was here for about maybe a week every day after this. You know, cleaning, taking obviously family belongings out, the mattress, everything like that.
How did the police not take that mattress into evidence? If there's blood on the mattress, doesn't that mean there's bullets in the mattress, or that the mattress?
It doesn't necessarily mean there's bullets in the mattress. If the story is what I think, you know, he comes in, you know, Matt wakes up, sits up in bed, and the guy's already shooting him, hypothetically, there would be, you know, bullet holes in the mattress.
He immediately got up and went after this guy.
So why is the
mattress covered with blood?
Do you feel that Matt was out of bed when he first got struck?
Not if we now hear that he has seen the mattress drive away covered in blood.
The mattress was covered in blood. That's 100%.
Ever since I first spoke with him, Mr. Garrison's story has lingered in my mind, particularly his eerie recollection of seeing Matt's mother-in-law carry a bloody mattress out of the house and watching her drive away with it in the bed of a truck. Presumably, this was the mattress on which Matt and Angel were attacked. I would have thought that would have been taken in for evidence. But what has really haunted me about my initial conversation with Mr. Garrison last summer was not his own experience, but something else he shared with me, recounting the experience of a woman who had lived just down the street from the Stewarts, who had told him and his wife a spine-chilling account, all starting with her hearing a knock on her door in the early hours of June 9th. This neighbor has since moved away, but it took me no time at all to track her down online. I sent her a few messages on social media and left voicemails on any number I could find associated with her name. Weeks went by, but I got nothing in response. So in August, I drove to her house and rang the doorbell. When her teenage son answered the door, I explained to him that I was a podcaster who wanted to talk with his mom about a murder that happened in 2009. When he went to go get her in the next room, I thought I was finally reaching the end of this rabbit trail. But that burst of excitement was short-lived when her son came back just a few minutes later and told me his mom wasn't feeling well and didn't want to talk. Not everyone is willing to talk about this murder, and that's an inconvenient reality I've had to accept. Still, there are those stories or connections that continue to gnaw at me. There's a list I keep on my desk, filled with the names of people who have some possible or confirmed relation to Matt or this murder, who are simply unreachable. Danielle, the woman Mr. Garrison first told me about back in June, had sat at the top of that list for months, until one random Sunday afternoon this January, when my phone screen lit up with a message from Danielle saying, I'll talk to you about Matt.
I've wanted to talk to you for a really long time. Did you live on Shepherd's Hill Drive?
Yes, I lived on 137. Brenda came to my house that night.
I've heard from neighbors that Brenda offered you a certain amount of money to use your phone. Was it
$300?
$300.
Yep.
She said,
I'll give you $300 if you let me use your phone.
Next month, we'll talk more with Danielle and other neighbors about their experiences on June 9th, 2009. Unforgotten is a Bold Era production, written and recorded by myself, Freddie Wilson, in the always sunny Daytona Beach, Florida. This episode is especially dedicated to Toylene Franco, the Stewart's next-door neighbor who we spoke with last season, who has since passed away, and to all the wonderful people I've met on Shepherd Hill Drive, who have helped me so much with this project. And also, a big thank you to Alex Reed for his contributions to this episode. As always, this series is dedicated to the life of Matt Stewart. May his memory remain unforgotten. If you have any suggestions about topics or questions to be included in future special episodes, you can submit them on the forum located at unforgotten.freeforums.net.